This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome to the Mother Wound Project podcast. I'm your host, Tandy. And today we're going to be talking about the scapegoat role, what it is, how it plays out in families, and why so many daughters end up carrying this heavy burden. The scapegoat is the child who gets unfairly blamed, criticized, or singled out so the family doesn't have to look at its deeper dysfunction. And oftentimes, the mother will criticize the child, blame the child. Actually, it's a lot of projection of her own dysfunction that she's projecting onto the scapegoat child. And it happens in both emotionally immature and narcissistic family systems. Sometimes it's obvious with constant criticism and blame. Other times it's more subtle. Passive aggressive or backhanded comments, being called the difficult one or the child that's overly sensitive or things like that. By the end of the episode, you'll understand why you were scapegoated, how it shaped your life, and what you can do now to break free from the lies that role planted in you or programmed within you. And I think that's the most important aspect here is how you can break free from this programming so that it doesn't affect your life now as an adult. So let's get into what is a scapegoat. At its core, scapegoating is when one child is unfairly blamed, criticized, or targeted to carry the weight of the family's dysfunction. And it is not only the mother that does this. You will find that she creates a dynamic where other siblings will also parrot the same beliefs that she has about this child as well. So they will say the same things. Instead of taking responsibility for her own flaws or her own problems or mistakes or whatever, the mother assigns those flaws to the scapegoat child, turning her into the quote identified problem. And this can be so damaging, and generally, not always, but generally, it's the scapegoat that ends up estranged from the family later on because they are the ones that saw through the BS from the beginning. And that is usually the reason that you're targeted, because you are the one who sees through it. You might be the one that's willing to call it out, or you may just be the empath. Sometimes it literally is the empath that ends up being scapegoated. Narcissists hate empaths. They can see you coming from a mile away. There are some narcissists that are within some extended family of mine, and they literally loathe me. And when I was younger, I didn't understand why. As a teenager, I'm like, why does this adult woman like literally hate me so bad? But as I grew up, I'm like, oh, I get this now. So you will find that when you are able to see through BS, when you can see they're like, I recognized this individual for how fake she was. I used to even say as a teenager, she's as fake as a $3 bill. I could see through her, and they don't like that. And so they literally hate you because you can see through them. And so if you were a scapegoat, likely is one of these scenarios where you could see through the BS going on, or you are very very empathetic or an empath, and that usually is how you end up getting targeted. And of course, every family has its own dynamic, and they all look different, but this is generally what you will see in this dynamic. So I want to give you a couple of scenarios. With an emotionally immature mother, she may, if you express sadness at a family gathering, she may snap at you. Don't make me look bad in front of everyone. So essentially, your feelings become the problem, not her lack of empathy. You see how that works? So if you're, you know, a little child and you're crying because someone took your toy or, I don't know, something happened, and she's like, do not make me look bad in front of everyone, or don't make a scene at this party. So again, you are the problem. If you're looking at more of a covert narcissistic situation, she might couch that blame in guilt. And so if we're looking at this same thing, of course, a covert narcissistic mother is going to be concerned about how everyone looks or how everyone perceives her, I mean. But what you'll see in this dynamic is there's going to be a little bit more of a passive-aggressive comment about you just being so sensitive or something like that. So she's going to add a little bit more of this guilt and shame layer on top of just worrying about how she's perceived. And an overt narcissist mother is going to be more direct. She's going to be more aggressive, and she may even publicly shame you. She may yell at you. She may humiliate you, say that you ruin everything. Why can't you just act normal like everyone else? So somewhere within this spectrum is what you'll remember how your mom reacted towards you in situations like this. Was she aggressive? Was she a little bit more passive aggressive, or a little bit more backhanded comments about, you know, how you just cry about everything or something like that? And that's just to kind of give you an idea of what this looks like when in a, you know, a specific scenario. So let's also look at why a mother does this, the kind of, you know, the why behind this system or dynamic. So if we're looking at this from a psychological standpoint, scapegoating functions as a defense mechanism. So an emotionally immature or narcissistic mom often have extremely fragile egos. And we talk about this all the time, I know, but it's literally the core issue. They have a core wound of shame and a very fragile ego. And so facing her own flaws is intolerable. I mean, it's literally like a threat to her survival. It's like staring death in the face. And so instead of facing her own mistakes or being able to have empathy or understand someone else, and in this case, just being able to understand, you know, her child and recognize her own mistakes, she displaces those flaws onto a child. And that's essentially what is happening with the scapegoat, is all of that kind of guilt and shame and all the things that she has within herself that she sees as flaws are going to get projected onto you. And you are going to be the one attacked for this. So what happens here is she is preserving the fantasy self, and they all have this. It doesn't really matter where they fall on the spectrum. They all have this fantasy version of themselves where they don't make mistakes, where they are perfect and they are always the victim. They are so self-sacrificing and giving, and they're so wonderful, and you are the problem. And this keeps her identity as the good mom, and she doesn't have to face herself, right? So she's going to find someone else to blame when anything goes wrong, which becomes the scapegoat. And then we look at projection. So she's going to project her own, we have kind of talked about this some, but projecting her own negative traits, anger, selfishness, laziness, whatever it is that she sees as a negative thing or a flaw, is going to get projected onto this scapegoat child. the scapegoat becomes the bad one. The scapegoat is lazy, can't control their emotions, they're selfish. She's projecting all of that on to the scapegoat child. And that could be any number of things. It really just depends on, you know, the individual mother and what she perceives as flaws and the whole dynamic, right? The scapegoat becomes the bad one, which allows the mother to keep this illusion of being blameless because it's the scapegoat's problem. Everything, the scapegoat is creating all of the chaos in the family, all of the problems is, you know, and this can be really heavy for a child to carry, really heavy. And it kind of depends on where your mom falls on the spectrum, how aggressive she is towards this, the scapegoat. And in dysfunctional family systems, the scapegoat serves as essentially a lightning rod. By funneling conflict and blame onto the one child, the rest of the family dynamic is protected, and the mother doesn't have to confront the bigger picture of what's going on. And a lot, what you'll find in a lot of cases is all of the other children, as I said earlier, will mimic this same thing of like, you know, scapegoat child is the one that's causing the problems. And a lot of times you will find the scapegoat child does push back on the family dynamic. They try to stand up for themselves. They're trying to call out, you know.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
The mother's behavior or what is going on. And in order to keep the peace and stay on the side of the mother, the rest of the children are also pitted against the scapegoat. Not always. Again, as I always say, every family dynamic is different. But generally, you will have a lot of family members pitted against the scapegoat, which very much isolates them. And it can be very, very painful, very, very dramatic, or it can be a little bit more subtle. But the key here is that scapegoating had nothing to do with the child's worth or even the child's behavior. It's about the mother's inability to tolerate her own shame and imperfection. And unfortunately, as a child, you don't understand the dynamic you're in. You don't understand what is happening. And a lot of times it causes you to second guess yourself, to wonder if you are bad, if you are the problem, if you are worthless, if you are lazy, if you are all of these things. And in a lot of cases, the entire family is parroting this stuff. And in fact, you may even have extended family, depending on the dynamic, where a grandmother will say that you're the problem, or cousins, or, you know, other family members that have been pulled into your mother's kind of dynamic. It can get really, really, really heavy. But the important thing that I want to pause here to and speak directly to the little girl inside of you, the one who spent her whole life being told that she was the problem. That little girl was blamed for her mother's moods, criticized for her choices, shamed for her feelings, and made to believe that if she could just be better, quieter, smarter, prettier, more talented, then maybe, just maybe, she'd finally be loved the way that she needed. But I want to tell you, you were never the problem. You never needed to be better or quieter or anything else. You weren't the problem. You were perfect just the way that you were. Scapegoating was not about your flaws. It was about your mother's inability to take accountability for her own pain, her own mistakes, shame, and dysfunction. And when a mother can't face her own wounds, she projects them onto the child who is the most sensitive, the most intuitive, and the strongest. The scapegoat isn't defective. The scapegoat is usually the one who was strong enough to see what no one else could see. The one who could see through all the BS and call out the dysfunction that nobody else would. And what you carried was never yours to hold. And I just wanted to speak to that because I think it's something that is so critically important for the scapegoats to hear and to understand. So moving on, psychologically, this role is devastating. Children internalize the belief that something must be wrong with them or they wouldn't be treated that way. And that belief follows you into adulthood, showing up as self-doubt, people-pleasing, perfectionism, and even entering into relationships where you feel like you're never enough. Sometimes you will enter into relationships that have the same family dynamic where you are with someone who criticizes you or who basically wants you to serve them and please them and manage their emotions, and you end up in that same dynamic again. And that is why healing is so important. I hear so many women that comment on my social media, like, cut my mom off, you know, had so much peace, everything is so great. Well, they have removed the toxic person from their life, but what they don't realize is that that isn't what healing is. That's the, in fact, if that is necessary, that's the beginning of the journey, not the end. And I want you to hear me very clearly, though. The problem was never you. The problem was an emotionally immature mother who offloaded her pain onto you. But this is why inner child healing is so important. Because that little girl inside of you still needs to hear that she was never too much. You were never too much. You were never unlovable. You were never the cause of your mother's cruelty. You deserved tenderness, safety, and love. And you need to know that, embody that, and fully embrace that belief, or you will carry this into friendships and other relationships in the rest of your life. This is why healing from this scapegoat identity is critical for your happiness and having a healthy, fulfilling life moving forward. And you can give your inner child that now, whether that's through guided imagery, journaling, letters to your younger self, hypnotherapy, going to therapy. You reparent that little girl and give her back what she was denied: safety, validation, and unconditional love. Because your mom was unable to do that. It was her problem. It was her inability to give you that. And this is the step where the shame begins to lift and you start to see yourself not as the family scapegoat, but as the woman who was always worthy of love and respect, as the one who was strong enough to see through the BS to trigger this whole scenario in the first place, right? You were the one that had the empathy or had the strength to see through this. And it ended up in a terrible dynamic. But looking back, when you can heal and recognize that you were always worthy of love and that you were never the problem. And you have to understand that on more than a conscious level. This has to infiltrate down into your subconscious, into your body, healing all of those stuck emotions and everything inside of you so that you can know this more than just, you know, in your conscious mind. So I want to talk a little bit about the effects in childhood and then moving through how this affects you in adulthood. Being the scapegoat as a child means you carry the weight of the family's shame, labeled as the problem, no matter what you do. It doesn't matter what you do. You will always be a problem to them. And I'll give you a little bit of my own story as just an example of how this can look. And it is not the same for any, you know, specific dynamic. But when I was young, my mom and my aunt would take me and my cousin on vacations or to the family cabin. And my aunt was very verbally abusive, very emotionally immature, and she even bullied me and my sister. She bullied my sister far worse than she did me. By the time I was old enough to have a choice, I started refusing to go on these trips. I did not want to sit in the dysfunction and bullying. So it was both my mother and my aunt were both emotionally immature. My mother, I would say, more of a covert narcissist. But I'm just going to call them emotionally immature. I mean, we're not diagnosing anyone here. But instead of understanding my mom, so my mom knows that her sister is damn near impossible to deal with. My mom even has friends who have said, if your sister comes, we will not come. I will not come if your sister is there. That is how toxic this woman is, and my mom is very aware of it. But instead of understanding why I would not want to be around her, my mom would turn my no into me being the problem. And she would tell my sister, oh, Tandy just doesn't like going on this trip and won't go with me, but you'll go, won't you? You're my little, you know, friend, you're whatever. My boundary of keeping myself away from a toxic person became proof that I was the problem. I was the difficult one. Now, this is a very basic scenario, but hopefully it helps you see how instead of your mom seeing why you're doing what you're doing and giving you understanding, it's turning you into the problem. You know, and that you'll find this every single time, no matter how old or young you are, you'll always get flipped into the problem. The truth is, like I said, my mom knows her sister's toxic. In fact, I, being the fixer caretaker as well, my mom would call me all the time crying because her sister had done some terrible thing or thrown her under the bus for something or lied about something to get in the good graces with someone else and use my mom as a pawn in all of this whole situation. My mom knows. And yet, instead of facing that reality, she painted me as the bad guy. My refusal to tolerate this abuse became twisted into a flaw of my character. That is scapegoating in action. The problem gets reassigned to you, so she doesn't have to confront the real problem. See, the real problem is my aunt's abusive behavior. But my mom's not going to face that, so...
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
I get to be the problem. When you've been scapegoated, it does not stop in childhood, though. It will follow you into adulthood, some in very visible ways and also in invisible ways. So there's the obvious, you know, family dynamic that you're still in. If you're still in contact with your family, you're still in the dynamic as the scapegoat. You get blamed for a lot of things. Those are the visible things, and those are not the things I feel like I really need to highlight. Because you already know that. You already know it. It's very obvious. But the invisible ways are the ones that often we don't realize. Like chronic self-doubt, over-apologizing. You second-guess every word, every decision, as if you're still that little girl being criticized for every decision you made and for everything that you did. Relationships where you're undervalued. Whether that's friendships or romantic relationships. Because you were conditioned to expect mistreatment, you may unconsciously tolerate being minimized or disrespected in friendships and with partners. You may feel like you don't belong. Scapegoating trains you to believe that you're the odd one out. So belonging feels unfamiliar and sometimes it feels unsafe. You may have ruminating thoughts, constantly questioning yourself. And these are the invisible things that you battle and you struggle with. Anxiety. You may also question whether people like you. It may be an automatic feeling that you feel like people don't like you because your own family didn't, right? And here's another truth. Scapegoats, as I said earlier in the podcast, generally are the ones who go low contact or no contact. Why? because they are the ones who see the dysfunction the most clearly. And they take the brunt of the blame. They are most often targeted in smear campaigns when they dare step away. For scapegoats, there's rarely a path to being seen or treated fairly in the family dynamic. And protecting yourself oftentimes means breaking away altogether. And it depends on the individual situation. Every situation is different. So I'm not in any way encouraging someone to run out and do that. I don't know your situation. That isn't for me to say. But it is very common for scapegoats to be the ones who walk away from the family dynamic because they're just tired of being blamed. They're tired of being the problem all the time. They see through the BS and they just, there's no other way that you can't change the dynamic, but you're always going to be the one targeted. And so a lot of times the only option that a scapegoat has is to walk away. The other thing that you're going to find though, as a scapegoat, is dealing with family members. Because it isn't just your mom in this situation who is criticizing you, blaming you, shaming you. It's other family members. And depending on your family dynamic, it could just be siblings. It could also be your father. It could be a grandmother. It could be extended family. This can go who knows how far, right? It could even be your mom's friends. Who knows? But one of the hardest realities of being scapegoated is that it often doesn't stop with her. It bleeds into the entire family system. And this is where we start having flying monkeys. We talk about this often. These are the people who defend your mom. They echo her narrative. They parrot the things that she says and keep the blame pointed at you. These are people who you're never going to be able to have a relationship with, because a lot of women will say they cut their mother off. Well, the flying monkeys, if you stay in relationship with them, will funnel information back to your mom. They will see a trip that you went on social media and it will get back to your mother. It just creates a very difficult dynamic. Many scapegoats, when they finally go to that point of limiting contact or going no contact with their mother, they discover that they also have to cut ties with other family members, or at least create some serious distance, like blocking them on social media. And this may happen with siblings or other extended family members who are perpetuating and enabling this dysfunctional dynamic. And I hate to say it, but the flying monkeys can be every bit as toxic as your emotionally immature mother, because they've bought her story about you being the problem. And the thing is, they think that they are doing good. That's the problem. They think that they are trying to keep the family together. They think that they are trying to fix the problem. But in their mind, in the narrative your mom has spun, you are the problem. So they are trying to, why can't you just forgive your mom? Why can't you just let go of the past? Why are you being so dramatic, right? You've heard these things. These people are part of enabling your mother's toxic dynamic. And unfortunately, when you start healing and setting boundaries and trying to distance yourself from this toxic dynamic, generally these people have to be part of those boundaries. And like I said, they'll tell you that you're too sensitive, that your mother's done so much for you. They will parrot all of these things of you being the problem. But I want to say, these are not truths. These are part of the scapegoating system. All of them parroting you being the problem and dramatic and why aren't you forgiving, they're just parroting your mother. They're not thinking for themselves. They're not opening their eyes and looking around the room. They're just like, oh, she says, so it must be true. And that's why it can be so painful. These are scripts designed to keep you in your place and to silence you. Your mother needs the scapegoat, because it is an easy way for her not to face her own shame and her own guilt and her own mess, right? Is you. And she needs you in that space, and she is going to get flying monkeys to try to keep you there. It can feel devastating to realize that protecting yourself from your mother may also mean losing relationships with siblings, cousins, or other extended family members. And this grief is real, and it cuts deep. You're not just grieving the mother you never had. You may also be grieving the family that you either thought you had or always wanted. We'll discuss healing from, you know, that grief later, because there is definitely a grieving process that you go through. Even if you stay in full contact with your family your entire life, there is always a grieving process of the mother that you always needed but never had, or the family that you always needed that you never had. There is a grieving process no matter how this plays out for you. But here's what I want you to hold on to. You're not losing love. Because real love does not look like this. It doesn't come with conditions like silence, self-erasure, or blind loyalty to an abusive system. What you're losing is access to relationships that were already poisoned by your mother's narrative. And while that loss still hurts, it also opens space for something better, where you are no longer sitting in a system where you are always pointed at as the problem, where you can find genuine, safe, reciprocal relationships built on respect and truth. And that's exactly what you deserve to have. So let's talk about how to respond to these flying monkeys. This is something that we do a lot in the inner circle. It's also something that's in the Mother Wound Survival Kit as well. We deal with a lot of responding to your mom, flying monkeys, and we talk about jade and gray rocking and all that kind of stuff. But one of the hardest parts of being the scapegoat is that every conversation feels like a setup. No matter what you say, it gets twisted back on you. And that's why you need these clear tools that keep you calm and grounded and out of the chaos when dealing with either your mother or her flying monkeys. And I'm going to give you a couple of tactics. These are not exactly what we deal with in the inner circle, but they're going to help you. And that is short responses, silence, and then the exit. That's your strategy. Keep it brief, keep it clear, do not explain, and don't apologize. So you're going to want to keep these very, very short. Remember, when you're saying, like, one of the things I always notice people will, when they're talking about not being able to do something, I'm sorry, I won't be able to make it. When you say, I'm sorry, when you apologize, before you even start your conversation, you've already put yourself in a lower position in this conversation. And that's not what you want to do. So it would be better for you to just say, I'm not able to make it. I won't be able to come. Don't apologize before saying it. That's just not how this goes, right? When you're talking with flying monkeys, this is another thing that we go in more depth in as well, is really, honestly, it's none of their business. And that's where you need to keep your responses when you're talking to flying monkeys, is essentially, this is between me and my mom. That is literally how every single response to a flying monkey needs to be approached, because it is not any of their business. And just let them know that. Don't argue, don't debate it. Just be like, you know, this is none of your business. I'm not talking about this with you, right? Silence is always a great one to do when people are saying manipulative or other things. Just, this is not the silent treatment, right? That is not the same thing. That's a manipulation tactic. This is just giving intentional space. So when someone throws out a toxic or disrespectful comment, you don't have to take the bait. Just let them sit in their own words. You know, it's basically the attitude of, that kind of disrespect does not deserve a response. So I'm not going to even respond to this, right? And then the exit. To an emotionally immature mother or anyone caught in her dynamic, a boundary isn't a boundary. It's an invitation to argue, debate, and negotiate. It's a negotiation. My mom, this is literally every boundary to my mom. When I say I'm not going to attend something, it's always a negotiation. There's always this, well, what about grandma? And this person's going to miss you, and grandma's not going to be around forever. And, you know, they will never accept a no. So when you've said what you need to say and the pushback starts, that's when you exit. I'm not going to discuss this. I said what I said. I'm done discussing this. And you need to hang up the phone, walk out, or leave the room. And you could do this calmly. This is not slamming doors. This is not, if you're going to act like that, I'm leaving. It is not that. Okay? Giving them any emotion is feeding the supply that they're looking for, especially if you're in a narcissistic dynamic. They're looking for that emotional response and they will use it against you. So this is not about emotion. This is just about the exit of like, I'm not going to discuss this anymore with you. I'm going to go now. You know, I need to go. I'm going to hang up the phone now or whatever, however you want to exit. But it's just a very calm, straightforward, like, I'm not going to discuss this anymore. I've got to go. I've got some things to do or whatever, however you want to do that leave or that exit. But this is where your power lies, because staying in the conversation is only going to get you sucked into the dysfunction of this whole issue. It's not worth it. It is not worth sitting in there and trying to defend yourself or give your reasons for why you're doing something. There's no point to that. She's going to try to poke holes in everything you say. So, and I go into more depth on these things and give you exact scripts and strategies in the Inner Circle and in the Survival Kit as well. When your family has blamed and shamed you for things that were never your fault, it leaves deep imprints of doubt, shame, and self-betrayal. But the good news is you're not stuck with that identity. And that's the biggest thing, is that you can heal and you can move forward and have a beautiful life beyond the dysfunction. And that's when life becomes so amazing. But living beyond the dysfunction means you've got to heal from that dysfunction. And this is, hypnotherapy was one of the keys to my healing process, and that is why I became a hypnotherapist. It helps quiet that critical inner voice that repeats the lies that your family drilled into you. It really goes to the subconscious mind, which stores those old wounds and belief patterns and is open to new truths. And what I love about it is you don't have to sit and talk about it for years. This is like a quick rewiring. It's phenomenal when it's done correctly. If you've been conditioned to believe negative things about yourself, that you are the problem, this is how we release that belief and replace it with the knowing that you are worthy of love and belonging. If your nervous system reacts with guilt every time you set a boundary, we use hypnotherapy to neutralize those triggers so your body and mind can feel safe standing in your truth. It's not about erasing your past. It's about giving your subconscious the freedom to stop running the old survival programs and start living in alignment with who you truly are. And I found it to be so powerful in my journey, and that's why in the Inner Circle, I offer a lot of just, it's kind of like a combination of like a guided meditation, but it's mixed with hypnotherapy, so it is far more powerful. We do a lot of those things because it is just something that was game-changing for me. Living in a family where you were constantly blamed creates hypervigilance. You're always waiting for the next attack. And somatic practices can help bring your body back into safety and back into presence. Now realize I use a lot of nervous system regulation and grounding practices, somatic practices. I have suggestions for those in the Survival Kit. We do a lot of these in the Inner Circle. But I want to point out that nervous system regulation, while a great thing, it is not to be used in a way where you are just constantly suppressing the emotions that are coming up. So be aware of that. When you are working in somatic practices and nervous system regulation, things like that, there is a time for that. But there is also a time to allow the emotions to surface and to feel them. And you are going to feel dysregulated in a sense when those come up. And you can regulate yourself after. But if you need to yell or scream or cry or feel emotions, they definitely need to be moved through you. So we don't want to use nervous system regulation as a way to suppress that. A lot of times, grounding practices, so having your bare feet on the floor, noticing solid surfaces beneath you, naming three things you can see, touching two things that you can feel, And one thing that you can hear, just grounding yourself in the present moment and then stating that you, I am safe in this moment. Breath work can also calm the nervous system after interactions with difficult people. Box breathing is just a really basic, easy one where you inhale for 4 counts, hold for 4 counts, exhale for 4 counts, and then hold for 4. So it's just a 4-4-4 making a box, right? This calms the stress response and sends the message to your nervous system to not stay on high alert. And those are just some very basic ones. But one of the hardest things about being scapegoated is your mother's rewriting of events, convincing you that what you experienced wasn't real, and also convincing you that whatever happened, you were the problem. And this is where journaling comes in. And I know a lot, I get so much resistance for this, but most of it is because people, I don't have time for this, I don't have time. Well, the problem with this is you've got to take the time to get the emotions and the thoughts out of you and to see what is going on behind the scenes. And journaling is how you do it. And I call it intuitive journaling, but it's really where you just sit down and you just start writing how you're feeling. And eventually it will just start coming out in what the program running underneath what you're consciously thinking. And it can get dark, it can get angry, it can be raging, a lot of swear words coming out. And this is where you really start moving the emotion. It's so crucial to healing to get that out. You can talk verbally as well. And this is a technique that I use with a lot of my coaching clients as well. But it's very important to allow those thoughts to move so you can see what's going on, so then we can reframe those things and not just have that constantly running in the background. And also, healing doesn't happen in isolation. It happens when you're witnessed, validated, and supported by others who understand you. And that's why I created the Daughters Rising Inner Circle. Because so many women say that, you know, they have friends that have never experienced this, or of course their family doesn't understand, and they really have a hard time finding people who understand what they are going through with their family dynamics. And that is why I created this. It's a community where women who have lived through these same dynamics come together to share their truths and lift one another up. And you are put into a sister circle of 5 to 8 women who have been through similar things as you, and you guys can just talk and interact and support each other. And it's just a really beautiful support system. We also have many other things in there as well, weekly calls and modules to help you work through different aspects of things that you are going through. And for many women, this is the first time they've ever heard the words, "I believe you. It wasn't your fault. You were never the problem." And it's safe spaces like this where you're free to drop the armor and finally be seen for who you truly are. And that is why I absolutely love meeting all of you there. It is still on waitlist, but it should be opening up in the next few weeks. So if you want to be a part of the Daughters Rising Inner Circle, you can go on my website, themothermoonproject.com, and click on Work With Me, and you'll see on the drop-down menu, you'll see Inner Circle, and you can sign up for the waitlist there, which should be opening up in the next couple of weeks. There are limited spots because I have to keep the sister circles small, 5 to 8 women, but it is a very, very powerful community. But I want you to know that you don't have to live trapped in the scapegoat role. And through a lot of these practices, safe connection and community, you can reclaim your dignity, calm your nervous system, and build a new life that is rooted in your truth, not your mother's love.